Well, I'm Paul Ontagook, and this is program 6 of an 8-part series on NUPAC studies. Before we go any further into the program, I'd like to check with our teleconference sites and see if Sally and Ambler is online.
Well, I'm here.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Fine.
All right. And Mary and Kiana?
Mary's here in Kiana.
Good to have you on the program. And Mike and Norvik.
Yes, I'm on, Paul.
Welcome again. All right, we're in program 6 of an 8-part series, and what we'll be looking at in this program is the role of government agencies in the role of government agencies and the influence that they've had on the history of the Nana region. As we look at these government agencies and the influence that they've had on our region, the time that we have available, we'll only be able to highlight some of the key changes that have been brought about by these different agencies. So we'll be looking at the areas of education, and in the area of education, we'll see how the Bureau of Education influence the direction of education in our region. We'll look at the educational impact of the Reindeer program on our area, the takeover by the BIA of the educational system and the direction that they took with it, the role of the state-operated schools on the history of the region, and finally we'll take a look at the present-day educational system, the rural education area attendance areas. Next, we'll look at the area of land, and specifically we want to note a unique feature of the region, which was the Norvik Reserve and its impact on land control and direction. We'll look at the park systems, the continuing influence that they have on the history of our region, and we'll also look at the role of Project Chariot, which was an Army Corps of Engineers program, which would have had substantial impact on the land of the region, and we'll note its importance to the history of the area. In the area of community control, we'd like to look at two forms of government which have had a great deal of impact on community control and direction, and that is the role of the IRAs, or the Indian Reorganization Act, traditional council governments, and also the role of municipalities since their creation on statehood and following. In looking once again at the area of lifestyle, what we'll be emphasizing by reviewing the Reindeer program is we'd like to focus on how it affected the lifestyle of the people of the region. And secondly, we'd like to take a brief look at the Marine Mammal Protection Act and note how it influenced the people and lifestyle of our area. And next, we would like to take a look at how the Public Health Service and Manilik, the nonprofit Native corporation, share in the provision of health care for the people of our area. And finally, and in many respects, most importantly, at least they've been a very important influences in the area of regional control, I'd like to take a look at the Northwest Alaska Native Association, the forerunner of Nana Regional Corporation, and its importance as a government agency in the history of our region. So as you can see, we've got a full list of government agencies, many areas that we would like to cover. We hope to highlight some of the major issues and impacts that these government agencies have had on our region, and just briefly note the direction that they took the history of our people and the people of this region in bringing us up to the present day. Next week's program, of course, will will devote entirely on the area of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, so we'll deal with that as a topic of its own importance. First of all, I'd like to have us follow the area of education, the history of education and the various government agencies that have had an influence on the history of education in our region. And following that, we'd like to open it up for some question and answers with the teleconference sites. First of all, should note that previous to the Bureau of Education coming into control of the educational institutions of our region, they had been established, the formal schools had been established by the Friends Church in their efforts to influence the entire communities of the Nana region. So they established not only missions of churches, but also mission schools. In the early 1920s, the Bureau of Education, late approximately 1914, all the way through the 1920s, the Bureau of Education takes over the direction of the schools. And what had happened there was that there was a reaction to Sheldon Jackson's cooperative venture between private religious institutions and public education. And the following administration of the Bureau of Education after Sheldon Jackson attempted to separate out the schools from the role of the churches in Northwest Alaska. And so there was a division between the Bureau of Education and the Friends Church in the region. One of the effects of the Bureau of Education was that it continued in its efforts to drastically change the society of the Nana region. They established the Norvik Reserve, cooperation with the teacher who was in charge of the Norvik site, which was Charles Rapogel and his son and wife. And their importance in the Norvik Reservation we'll deal with in itself when we get to the issue of land. What we should note about the Bureau of Education, though, is that the most important topic of our agenda for them was that education was seen as not only the providing of knowledge, but it was character building and society building. They had a very ambitious goal of moving and changing, radically changing the entire nature of the way people lived in this area, moving people from subsistence, hunting, gathering, to what they consider to be the next step up in society, which would be a herding society. Right. With the reindeer program, that was a part of the Bureau of Education's efforts towards social change. It was seen as an educational tool, and the way it directed educational change was that they thought that by the people working with the reindeer, by having to continually manage the reindeer herds, that it would improve the character of people. And we'll go into more detail on the nature or the life view of the Bureau of Education when we deal with the reindeer program under lifestyles. But it was seen as a part of their basically that social Darwinistic outlook, which was so predominant in the region at the time. The reindeer program was a way of educating people to a new lifestyle. In 1890, the reindeer program was established by Sheldon Jackson. It was carried out through the mid-1890s, initially with Siberian reindeer and Siberian herders, but due to a conflict with the community of Wells, in particular, the people of the community of Wells, the Siberian reindeer herders left the region, and that left a vacuum in who would teach the people, Alaska Natives, how to handle these reindeer. And the way that was filled was that the Bureau of Education then went to the Finnish lap herders, brought them in under the terms that the lap herders would provide for the educational needs of Alaska Natives in managing reindeer. And in return for that, the lap herders would be allowed their own herds to be privately owned. So that was a deal that was cut with them. The Lohman brothers were people that became very important to the history of the reindeer program because they saw the economic opportunity that was available in the reindeer industry. And they looked at the 40,000 miners that were then in the Nome area. This is in about 1900. And they began acquiring reindeer as a source of meat for that ready market for the supplies. They bought their first herds from a Kotzebue lap herder, Alfred Nalima. And from that, they rapidly grew in their herd acquisition until they had over 14,000 head of reindeer, and they were the major reindeer owners in Northwest Alaska. Congress looked at what the Lohman brothers were doing and looked at the fact that a large percentage of the reindeer were 20 years after the reindeer were introduced into the region were still owned by the churches. They looked at the fact that there were many other non-natives who were controlling the reindeer, saw that Alaska Natives were not receiving the majority of benefit from the reindeer program, and they said to themselves, well, we use public funds to really carry through the reindeer program for the express purpose that it would benefit Alaska Natives. What we see now that primarily it's the reindeer program is owned and to a large degree controlled by the Lohman brothers and other non-natives. We need to address this issue. And the way they addressed it was that in 1937 they passed the Reindeer Act. And the Reindeer Act simply stated that non-natives could no longer become or be owners of reindeer. And they provided money for the repurchasing of those reindeer, which were owned by non-natives. The Reindeer Act, for a number of reasons, occurred too late to save the industry. It was already in a sharp decline by the 1930s and would continue to fall into that decline until by 1950 there were only 25,000 reindeer in the region. Due to a lack of marketing, the Depression occurred at approximately the same time. The transportation problems were never sufficiently resolved. There was an increase in wolf predation on the calving that occurred, the fawns of the reindeer herds. And finally, because there had not been sufficient management of the reindeer herds previous to the Reindeer Act, there was an overgrazing that had wiped out the very delicate basis for the reindeer industry, which was the lichen on the Seward Peninsula. Reindeer lichen is their chief food source in the wintertime, and it takes 15 to 30 years to recover from overuse. So for a number of reasons, the Reindeer Act population crashes. It was seen, though, principally as an educational opportunity. What they sought to do was to provide a way for Alaska Natives to come into the cash economy through the reindeer. And secondly, they saw it as a vital food supplement to provide an alternative to the boom-bust population cycles that are inherent with wild game populations, to prevent those periodic starvation cycles which occurred in the history of the people, that the reindeer would be a reliable source of a food supplement. Right. Looking next at the role of the BIA in education, in the mid-1920s, the Bureau of Indian Affairs took over responsibility for Alaska Native education, and it was very specific in that it only took control of Alaska Natives. The Bureau of Indian Affairs ran schools for Natives, and the territorial government ran schools for the non-Native peoples of the community. This was a pattern followed all the way up through the 1940s of segregated schools. The reasoning behind the segregation was the differing purposes between the two educational institutions. It was thought that Alaska Natives were best fit and most capable in vocational skills, that Alaska Natives did not have the higher levels of thinking, intellectual capacity necessary for a college education or those types of intellectual endeavors. So the focus of the early BIA programs up through the 1940s at least, and often well beyond that, was vocational technical training, hands-on experience. Alaska Native boys were, their training emphasized carpentry, boat building, home construction, mechanics, things of that nature. For Alaska Native women, it was skin sewing and homemaking skills. Those are the primary areas of training for Alaska Native people under the BIA. The goal was, once again, an active policy of social change. They bought into the social Darwinistic outlook, which we've discussed before. Basically, with social Darwinism saying that of the different levels of society that exist, the lowest is hunting. Hunting, gathering, followed by the next higher stage, roughly, being herding. Followed by agriculture, and finally the highest stage of evolution was seen as industrial society. High not only because of its technical achievements, not only because it provided an improved standard of living, a better lifestyle, but it was thought that by moving up the chain, you not only produced a better living standard, but that you produced better people. That it improved your character as you moved up the different levels of society, that you became a better person. If you bought into this theory of social Darwinism, then you would want to move a society as quickly as possible from the traditional subsistence lifestyle as quickly as possible into industrial society through these other stages. And that was anticipated. The Bureau of Indian Affairs often talks about the reindeer industry as a transitional organization, a transitional society, preparation for a farming program in the Arctic, and finally, and most hopefully, an industrial and crafts program, which would be the final stage for educational development of Alaska Natives. The Bureau of Indian Affairs also saw that one way of breaking away from the traditional lifestyle and the traditional system that people were involved in would be to take the younger generation of people and move them out away from that environment, separate them out, and educate them completely, not only in school, but in their day-to-day life. And so the boarding home programs were seen as a key ingredient in bringing up a new generation of Alaska Natives, which would be completely assimilated into the great American way of life, the melting pot of American society. Boarding home program was also seen as economically justified because it would take all of those numerous groups of students, high school students scattered throughout Alaska, and concentrate them in places like Mount Edgecombe, Chilocco, or Chamawa in Oregon. There are any number of boarding home programs, but that was a goal that was set out for the boarding home programs, a complete education of Alaska Natives for the American way of life. State-operated schools took over more and more of the BIA programs as the state got onto its financial feet. The goal of the state-operated schools was in many respects similar to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but rather than being headquartered in Washington, they were headquartered in Juneau. The boarding homes, rather than being headquartered in Oklahoma, Oregon, and Sitka, were established on a regional level so that the William Belts Vocational Technical Center in Nome became first the Belts High School, and then after Nome City School saw an opportunity to get a hold of that facility, it became the Nome Belts Regional High School, which they control to this day. The Bethel High School, Regional High School, was also established at this time. There was a regional high school established in Kodiak also. The goal of the boarding home programs, as reflected from the records that were there, indicate very much the same purposes in mind, that you would be educating the student basically 24 hours a day to a different lifestyle, preparing that student for the greater society and out of the traditional subsistence society. The regional high schools had numerous problems, numerous difficulties, which indicated by extremely high rates of alcoholism, suicide rates all out of proportion to any other high school population, which were not, it was not in a failure rate of attendance and students not completing high school, which was incredibly high. Not all of these can be attributed strictly to the boarding home program, but it was definitely a factor in that problem. There were several studies done on that noting the difficulties of the boarding home programs, and if anything, underplaying those difficulties. Eventually what occurred was 25 rural Alaskan students filed suit against the state of Alaska in court, holding that the present system of education, the system that was present at that time, was basically unequal, because if you were living in an urban area like Anchorage, you had the right to, within your own community, while attending, while living in your own home, to attend a high school. That opportunity was made available by the state. But if you were living in rural Alaska, the only way you could receive an education was to move out of your home, away from your family, and live in a boarding home situation. And to these rural Alaskans, it was manifestly unequal. Urban area has a local school, the rural area doesn't. And so it was never settled in court, rather it was settled out of court. The Molly Hooch decision is what it came known as, in which the state committed itself to the construction of well over 90 schools within rural Alaska, the last one which was the high school in Diomede. These schools, small rural schools, came at a time when the Land Claims Act was still being settled into, and it had a tie into the next phase, the final phase that we discuss on education, which was the REAAs. Rural education attendance areas. They were established in July of 1976. The people who drove to see these educational areas established, in many cases, were the same Alaska Native leaders who had worked on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The idea was that there would be regional control over the small high schools, over the elementary schools, that state-operated schools would be broken up, and that each region would gain control over the future of and the direction of education concerning its students. The boundaries for the REAAs normally approximated those of the regional corporations, the only exception being if you were within a first-class city, then you of course had your own school system. For instance, Selawik, for a number of years, had its own school district. The idea of the REAAs, of course, is to provide for local control over both the how the monies are spent and the course of study and the personnel who are involved in the education of the regional people's students. And Northwest Arctic School District is our REAA, established since July of 1976. That real briefly is a history, an overview of the educational systems and government agencies in our region. Are there any questions over what we've covered so far? Mike and Norvik?
No, not at the moment, Paul.
All right. How about Chuck and Selawik?
No questions right now, Paul.
All right. And Olaf and Shungnak?
Not at this time, Paul.
All right. How about Terry and Noatak online?
No questions. Thank you.
All right. And Mary and Kiana?
No questions. Thank you.
Sure. Stan and Deering?
Thank you.
All right. And Conrad and Buckland?
No, sir.
No, sir, huh? All right. And Sally and Ambler?
Not I.
All right. This time, I think what we'll do is, you guys are letting me off the hook there. There were any number of areas that could have been interesting there, but appreciate it. We'll have more opportunity for questions later on, perhaps after we deal a little bit with community control. The next issue that I would want to deal with is that of land. The question of land control, of course, traditionally, people of the region were divided up into different groups, which each had control over their particular part of the region. In 1917, however, there was a new twist in the history of our regional control, and that was the establishment of the Norvik Reservation. By way of background, apparently both the people who were to make up the Norvik Reservation and Charles Rapogel, who is a teacher at Deering, saw a number of factors which made moving from Deering a step which they wanted to take advantage of. One of them was at the time in Deering there was a substantial gold mining community. And gold miners were thought to be a negative influence on the health of the community with reports of gambling and rampant alcoholism and running women and all those normal the stereotypic images that you have of a gold mining community. It was thought that was unhealthy. Also noted in the records for why they moved from Deering was that it was felt there was a shortage of game because of the large gold mining community. And finally, they noted that they wanted to be near more ready access to building supplies. They wanted to get into the tree line. And after some searching, they established the Norvik Reserve. The Norvik Reserve was created by Woodrow Wilson as a presidential executive order in 1917. The difference between a reserve and a reservation is basically, although there are more substantial ones, basically a reservation is created by Congress and a reserve is created by presidential executive order.